number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans and Bucks, Nissan Stadium, Sunday at noon. How wet is it going to be? I don't know. Hopefully the rain will have gotten out of here by then. Looks like it's going to be a lot today and tomorrow, hopefully cleared up by Sunday. Alumni weekend, our own D-Mace from Morning Drive, and Chris Johnson, CJ2K, will be the two 12th men on Sunday.
It's the 20th anniversary of the Super Bowl team and the 10th anniversary of CJ2K. So that's why those two are the 12th Titans.
Very nice. We wanted, because we talked a lot about Jeffrey Simmons this week, and we wanted to bring Albert Haynesworth into the conversation, and we do appreciate him joining us. Big Al, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Let me just start off by saying, since we haven't talked to you in a while, I mean, how are you doing? Like, health-wise, how is everything?
I'm doing better. I mean, I'm feeling better. I mean, I haven't gotten the kidney yet, but I'm still, like, I'm doing dialysis 3 days a week, so that's going well for me. So I feel pretty good, actually.
Well, good. Good to hear. We've been thinking about you, and like I said, we haven't talked to you in a while, so just wanted to check in and make sure everything was good. So you're going to be a part of Alumni Weekend, and I guess I'll ask you, because there's going to be a lot of familiar faces and names at Nissan Stadium on Sunday, including yours. Maybe we had Lo Neal in here a couple weeks ago when he was in town. We had him in studio with us for an hour. Just maybe a memory that stuck out to you whenever you were a member of the Titans. What would it be? How would you answer that?
I mean, there's so many, to be honest. Like, y'all just had a great time. It was, the defense is like a brotherhood, you know. Probably the best anywhere, to be honest. I mean, we're dominant. I mean, we knew what each other were doing, and we did it. And basically our leader, of course, on the defensive front was Wash, Coach Washburn. So he got us riled up, and we went out there and just wanted to destroy people. So, I mean, literally, there's so many. I mean, I don't even think we have enough time to talk about it.
Well, we've certainly talked a lot about those defenses that you're referring to, because they were special. You're right. And it's pretty interesting, because this Bucks defense, I don't know if a lot of people would have known what we've been talking about this week. They are extremely stingy against the run. I mean, they are shutting everybody down against the run. You can talk about that, because you guys were extremely stingy on shutting down the run, and you guys were getting the push up front. What goes into that, Albert, to have a successful run-stopping defense?
Well, one is the way we played, you're not going to get out on the edge of us. Like, you're not going to get out on our end, so you're not going to be really able to run a sweep. That's why we practiced that so hard. Also, we're putting our defensive tackles in a great position, either in a 3 or 2-I or 2. And so it was just hard. And then our linebackers kind of played off us. Like, I was wrong a lot of the times. And Keith, being 5 yards back, he backed me up. He didn't feel like, hey, this is my gap. You go to your gap, I go to my gap. He's like, I'm 5 yards back. You're like, you blowing up the play, heck, I'll just fit in. And that's kind of what happened. So you got to have a very strong, front 7. And if you do that, you'll have a good defense at least. And then, also when you can stop the pass, even better. That's when you're, up there to top 5 or number 1 defense in the league.
Albert Haynesworth on the line with us, and I brought your name up on Monday's show when we were talking about the game against the Chargers, and we were talking about the NFL debut of Jeffrey Simmons. He was a part of 21 snaps, and I said, I got to be honest, I know this is really, really early. Excuse me, I'm getting choked up talking about it. Really early in his career. It's game 1, I get it. But I, watching him I couldn't help but think, oh my gosh, is this the next Albert Haynesworth for the Titans? You got a chance to see him. What did you see out of the young man?
I definitely do. Like, he impressed the heck out of me. I mean, like, I know he was strong, and then I'll say that when you drafted him and stuff, and I was really a little bit worried about him, you know, coming back this early and playing. But just watching him, I mean, super strong. He controls the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's going to be unbelievable. I mean, I still want him to get healthy because he's not – I don't think he's 100% healthy, because that was one play where he didn't have the strength to push off his left leg that he would have. And then if he had that strength, I mean, it would have been a great play. So he just got to get healthy. But, yeah, I think if they can literally kind of how Schwartz did me, you know, later in my career with the Titans, of taking the plow off the racehorse and then letting other guys just work around him, is going to be extremely special for the Titans.
We're talking.
Like they have to do that. They have to learn to do that. They got to learn that this guy is not just another guy. Like, he is special. He's very strong, and he can create push. And if you let the other guys work off him, they'll do well.
Albert Haynesworth is with us. And, Albert, I guess it's coincidence that this is the night after the Redskins lose another game and they look bad. But I remember when you went to Washington, that was something that you were disappointed with in the whole process. They didn't think they were – you didn't think that they were using you properly. And you're just talking about just the usage of a player and how important it is to bring out the best in them. So tell us about that, because from us, where we watch, it just looks like, you know, everybody's jumping in there trying to make plays, but we don't see the nuances like you do.
Like, the difference, I mean, there's some special players that you have to build around, that you have to kind of adjust your coaching to those players. And, you know, like you asked Jim Schwartz, I mean, great coordinator. I think he'll be a great head coach. I turned the lines around. But if you ask him, he's like, when I kind of like put my ego to a side, it's like I got a big-time player that can move, strong, creates disruption. I'm just going to let him go. Keith, you play off. Everybody else play off. That's when we start seeing running the games, you know, running the pass games, and, you know, getting the pressures on the quarterbacks. That's when you see my, like, sack numbers go up and, you know, and everything. So then I go to Washington. I mean, instead of one plow, they put on, like, two plows. It's like, I mean, they wanted me to do something I've never done in my life, playing a 3-4. Well, before that, like the first year with Bosch, like, you know, with Schwartz, we never had to like, adjust to the call. Like, once we got our call, like, it's, you know, right, and I'm lined up in a 3 or whatever, we're going to play that call. Like, Washington, my first year, which they told me, like, hey, we're going to play the same defense that Tennessee does. We're going to do the same exact thing. You know, just so we got even, I think, better talent. It's going to be great. This is what I heard from the front office guys. Well, when I get there, first practice, mini camp, like, we're doing all these, like, checks, like, somebody motions over, we're going like check right, the whole line got a slide. Then they're like changing play in the middle of the cadence. I mean, it's just, you got so much to think about. Like, you can't even get off the ball. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just crazy. And I'm like, you know, how can we, like, you know, while we're adjusting, why don't we just play and let the linebackers adjust since they're, you know, 5 yards back? They just don't like somebody being, I guess, smart and knowing football like that, and they kind of had an attitude with me. Then, of course, the other little guy comes in, you know, little Napoleon guy, you know, with a complex. he comes in, He comes in and says, I want you to grab the center. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, you're going to spread your legs, you're going to grab the center, and the linebacker is going to run through. It's going to be awesome. And I'm like, okay. But I was like, people are going to, like, say, like, I'm not doing anything. Like, if that, he's like, oh, no, I'm just going to tell him you're doing great. You're doing great. And I'm like, all right, if you can get a guy, you can pay a guy, like, $300,000 to, like, grab the center. You're not going to pay somebody, like, this kind of money just to grab the center. It doesn't make any sense. And I said this, maybe we can work on a trade or something like that. And he, like, joked, like, hey, I hear you got a nice condo. I was like, yeah, well, y'all get me out of here, you can buy it, definitely. So, I mean, it was crazy, that place. Like, literally, I mean, it's the first time I'm meeting this guy. That's what he says. He wants me to grab the center. And I'm like, what about sacks? What about this? Like, no. And I'm like, what? Like, I wish I would have had this stuff recorded. I mean, I swear, this day, like, I wish I had this recorded, because you guys wouldn't believe what he was telling me. I, as soon as I got out of office, I had to call my agent and, like, man, you would not believe what this guy just said. And so, I mean, that's the story of it, how it happened there. And I just kind of really got burned out of playing football. I mean, just after that crap, you're thinking everybody is like the Titans, you're thinking every football organization is the same. Not even close. Even though they're playing the same game, it's not even a close.
Albert Haynesworth is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And listening to you, tell that story, and then about Jeffrey Simmons. Have you and Jeffrey actually been able to talk and spend some time together? Have you met each other yet?
No, not. I mean, we kind of like met. Yeah, I was in a tunnel last week, and he was coming in. And we like shook hands and all that stuff. But he was going in for the game and all that stuff. So didn't really talk to him. But yeah, I'd love to talk to him. And just what I see of him. Like, through media, like, seems like a great young man. And I'm just excited to watch him play. And I really hope that, Mike figures out that how he can use this guy, because, he's going to be special. I'm not saying this year, because he's still not 100% healthy, I don't think. But I think next year, I think get him a little bit more involved. Like, look at our old film where Schwartz did, or even talk to Schwartz or somebody, and kind of just take the plow off, because I think he's going to be extremely special, and it's going to be a very dominant D tackle. I feel like we've been missing, really since I left. So he's going to be awesome to see him just push back the line, and put the guards and center in the quarterback space.
I feel like, Albert, that you were obviously one of these players, but with the Titans playing the Bucs and Dominican Sue now with Tampa Bay, he falls into this category that Jeffrey Simmons can hopefully get to one day of, you have to respect what that player can do. And so when you're scheming against a defensive player like that, you can't just leave them uncovered. You can't ignore them, because I can remember how many times you were double teamed and that opened up, the lane for Kyle VandenBosch or somebody else. Do you feel like that's where this is going to go with Jeffrey Simmons, that he will be be something like that, where offenses are just going to look at him and go, well, we got to double team him?
Absolutely. I mean, I think he's going to improve during this year, and I think next year offenses are going to, hey, we got to think about this guy. We have to, worry about it. We're going to have to double team this guy. And then as he gets better and better, and literally, if the Titans adjust to that, because it's going to happen, and having having other guys just moving around like they do, because that was one thing I was kind of disappointed in the Titans. Like, they do a lot of movement, and they do a lot of blitzing just to get pressure, especially like last year. And so I think they really needed Jeffrey to come in, and I think he's going to be that guy. So if they can do that same thing, and just having him go forward, destroying, lining him up on a wide three, maybe in the four eye of the opposite tackle, and they run their games like they're doing, I think they're going to have a lot more success, and their ranking in defense is going to definitely go up.
Albert, after hearing all this, I feel a lot better about my assessment on Monday. I thought, man, that was probably premature to say that for that young man. But now that you've said everything you've told us, I feel better about it. So, hey, thanks for doing this. Always good to talk to you. Have fun this weekend, and we will certainly talk to you down the road.
All right, I'll see you guys. Appreciate you for having me on.
All right, thanks for doing it as always. That is Albert Haynesworth. And, wow, how cool was the Washington Redskins story? I mean, we always knew that it was a disaster, but when you hear him say, hey, we just want you to grab the center and pull him down, I was thinking something. The same thing before. I was like, you could get anybody to do that. Why would you pay him $100 million and like $40 or $50 million guaranteed to come in and pull a center down?
Well, that was fascinating. Maybe let's come back to that on the other side, because just to put it in context of the Nashville sports scene, just how big of a story it was when he left the Titans to go to the Redskins.
Yep. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I just kind of really got burned out of playing football. I mean, just after that crap. You know, you're thinking everybody is like the Titans. You're thinking every football organization is the same. Not even close. Even though they're playing the same game, it's not even a close.
Tell you what. Pretty incredible stuff from Albert Haynesworth. Tell you what, brought back a lot of memories. And I'll tell you what, if Jeffrey Simmons is anywhere in the same zip code as Albert Haynesworth at his best, I'm just telling you, for all the new people that have moved here, maybe from afar, you didn't pay really close attention to Haynesworth's career, he was the most dominating force for what, a two-year window, maybe
two
three?
Seasons,
two
for sure.
Seasons. He was the most dominating force in the NFL. I mean, on that side of the ball, you could not stop him.
And
he just blew everybody up.
It took a few years for him to hit his stride. He was more of a role player in his first couple of years. They always saw the talent. And it's not like he was a bad player. He was helping them. The first couple of years, the Titans were still a Super Bowl contender, 02, 03, a couple of really good teams. But then, remember, they had to break it down.
Yeah.
It let guys like, remember, the trade of Derek Mason and Samari Roll and Steve McNair, they all ended up on the Ravens.
They had to cut a couple of them, Kevin Carter.
Yeah. And then they built it back up. Jim Schwartz became the defensive coordinator, and they all of a sudden built the defense around him and Keith Bullock. Really, those were the two anchors. And then you had a dominant defense again, but he was as good as anybody. Remember, there was a huge article in Sports Illustrated about it. I mean, a long article just about how much he was dominating the game. And then he hit free agency. That was a big story here, was were the Titans ready to commit the big dollars it was going to take, a long-term contract, or was he going to hit free agency? Or are they going to keep franchising him? It got to that rubber hitting the road.
Well, remember,
how many times can they franchise?
Mistake of saying they're not going to, you know, okay, we won't do it anymore.
We'll franchise it this year, but we won't do it next year.
Which was a huge mistake.
That was
and
huge.
We said it.
That was a mistake.
We were doing the shows then. We were like, that's a huge mistake. That rule is there. You don't have to change because the player doesn't want to keep getting franchised. Other teams have done it. Like, you shouldn't do that.
And there were reasons why they didn't want to commit, because he had had the issue on the field, you know, where he stomped on the guy's head that he had
Andre
been suspended
Gerard
a couple years before.
Yep, Cowboys game. Vince Young's rookie year.
I was there.
06.
So he had his issues, but he was a integral. He was a guy that they couldn't lose, and they were never the same without him once he left. But the other flip side of that was, as he just described, he got this truckload of money from the Redskins, and that was a giant story nationally, is how quickly they handed him the $41 million guaranteed, and it was one of the biggest contracts
That was when the whole legal tampering period
probably started the ball rolling down the
probably
hill.
We changed the rules. Because it was so obvious that they had done the deal.
Wasn't it the next year or maybe 2 years after that
I don't think it was the next year, but it was clearly that was basically the straw, right?
Yeah.
That's what broke everything.
Because free agency opened at midnight, and he was signed by
12:05.
Yeah.
The biggest massive deal
right.
anyone's ever seen, and it was done in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Really?
But what's funny, you go back to 2008, which was, you know, his last year here, and, you know, obviously they started 10-0 and lost to the Ravens. But that D line was led by Albert, then Kyle Van Den Bosch. Javon Kearse had come back, but was still, it wasn't the same Javon Kearse by any means. And then Tony Brown, right? That was the other. That was that. I can remember them like arm, you know, being like a chain, essentially holding up the 10-0 when they started. But that's what I brought up with Albert of, you know, nothing against the other guys on that line. Kyle Van Den Bosch was very good in his own right, but because Albert was there, it opened it up for some of those others, like Javon Kearse to have, you know, one more run, and then KVB as well, because you had to respect Albert there in the middle.
But this is something that I think a lot of people have had to learn over time in the free agency or trading for a player. And, you know, there's an article today and on ESPN's website about how there have been more trades. But you have to be able to know how you're going to use a player. And a player's stats or value in one place, in one scheme, may not be the same if it's a different scheme. And that's where Haynesworth got off track immediately, is they were running a 3-4. He had never been in a 3-4, and yep. I guess he just thought it would work out. They convinced him it would work out, and it just got off on the wrong foot.
The little guy with the complex. Yeah,
I'm not sure which guy he's talking about. I don't know.
I think we know.
Well, we know the head honcho there.
Yeah, maybe the.
But he said he seemed to the say owner, another guy. Well, he seemed to.
I took it as Shanahan and Snyder, right? That's what I took
it
as.
Well, was Shanahan there, or was that Jim Zorn? Was Zorn before Shanahan, or was that?
It could have been a position coach that he was talking about, or a defensive coordinator. I'm not sure. But
go back and look at that.
I'm looking it up.
I was just assuming he was talking about Shanahan and obviously Snyder. The little guy with the complex.
he's definitely a little
but
guy.
But it has you here, though. Always, because we thought about it at the time, like, what if?
Like, okay, so when he signed, it was Jim Zorn for 08-09. That was the coach that he signed with, replacing Joe Gibbs.
I think things, though, went really,
and then it
really,
was Shanahan.
Really poorly when Shanahan came into the mix. That's when things got, like, it was basically the end.
It was the classic. It was the classic lose-lose, because the Titans started the next season 0-6.
Yep.
Even though CJ2K had 2,000 yards, the season was essentially over. They worked to get back to where they kind of were in
it. They finished 8-8.
Yeah. They were somewhat still in the race late, but the horse was out of the barn, right? And
that was that game in New England, right, where they just got I forgot what the score was, but they were the
59-0?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always used to joke, no, that was the Oilers, because they were wearing the Oilers uniforms. That wasn't the Titans. That was the Oilers.
Well, that's where it sort of culminated.
Yeah.
But there was an immediate impact of not having Haynesworth there. And there was an immediate, this is going completely off the rails with Haynesworth in Washington. So it's like the classic, what if you could do it over again? What would you do?
They won 7 of their next 8 after getting curb stomped in Foxborough.
Yeah, because they had the bye.
59-0.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, they were 13-3 and the number one seed in the AFC playoffs the year before.
Yep. Well, yeah. They started off 10-0.
10-0.
I was at that game in Cincinnati, the second game of the season. I went to Lexington, went to MTSU Kentucky game on Saturday at then Commonwealth, and then drove up to Cincinnati the next day and went to the Bengals Titans. And there were like 60-mile-per-hour winds at that game. You could barely throw. If you threw the ball, you had to throw it in a different direction and hope the wind would take it to where you were trying to hit. I'm not even kidding. Right. It was that crazy. And, of course, the Titans ended up pulling away and just beating up on Cincinnati that day. I think they won, 24-7 that game, because you couldn't do much. I mean, the offenses couldn't do it. It was so windy that day, and that wasn't a great Bengals team.
No. And then, so 2009, where they started off 0-6, wasn't that you were there in the preseason in Dallas? That was the debut of Jerry's World?
Was 2010.
No, well, 2009 was, I think, when...
No, 2010 was the first season of Jerry's World. Trust me. It was 2010. Look it up.
I will.
Yeah, at Dallas, October 10th.
But they played in the preseason, and I thought that was Jerry's world because both punters were hitting the scoreboard.
And Jeff Fisher basically instructed his punter to kick it off of the Jumbotron so he could make a point that they needed to move that thing.
That was an 09, yeah. So preseason game.
Right. That's when it opened. You're saying in 2010 is when Jerry's World.
So that was the second year of it?
Yeah.
I thought when I went there in 2010, that was the first year. Okay, it may have been the second year.
Because 2009, it opened, and the Titans played there in the preseason because A.J. Trapasso, who ran the fake punt in the Hall of Fame game.
That is correct. I'll tell you why. Because the first preseason game, Willie, we were there. It was in Canton at the Hall of Fame.
That was
the Hall of Fame game.
That was when they ran the fake punt because with A.J. Trapasso.
That's right.
Craig Hendrick was still on the team, too.
That is correct. All right, we'll come back. Terry McCormick, he was there at all those games, too. He's with TitanInsider.com. We'll talk more about this on the other side. ESPN 102.5, the game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, has been covering the team since they've been here. He remembers the Albert Haynesworth days.
Does
quite
he remember
well.
Funky Town?
But does does he know the artist? I bet he does.
Lips Inc.
There you go. I knew I could count on you, Terry. Lips Inc.
It's from the 60s, 70s, or early 80s. It's in my wheelhouse.
You're all over
it. 1993. Sorry, I'm out.
Yeah, if we start asking Terry about Halsey and Post Malone, he's going to be like, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Moses Malone. Not
right,
Post
exactly.
Malone.
That's what it would be. Billie Eilish, talk about her. What? So I don't know if you had a chance to hear our conversation with Albert. He had a lot of glowing remarks about Big Jeff, Jeffrey Simmons' debut. 21 snaps. Obviously, we all saw what he did on that final play, which ended up being the game winner for the Titans. What did you make of Jeffrey Simmons? I know it's one game. But one game to what's everybody's hoping is going to be a long career. What did you see?
Well, I saw a kid that obviously has a lot of talent, a lot of raw talent, and you know, coming off in the injury that he had, you know, I don't know what anybody, you know, if anybody could have really said, hey, this is what he's going to be able to deliver, or this is what he's going to, you know, be able to give you, that sort of thing, but. When you look at the way he played, a tackle for loss, you know, his first career sack, 6 overall tackles I think he was credited with, you know, you're seeing a guy that has the potential to be a dominant type player, sort of like Albert Haynesworth, sort of like Aaron Donald, those types of players, you know, they don't grow on trees. And when you've got one, it makes a world of difference. And to me, when you're looking at it, you know, from this perspective, the one thing that the defense has had trouble with over the last couple of seasons with Dean Pease being the defensive coordinator is getting a consistent pass rush. And, you know, you normally think of that coming off the edge, and their edge players are okay, but they're not, you know, they're no difference makers there on the edge. I think we would all agree with that. But what you can do with a guy like Jeffrey Simmons paired with Jarrell Casey getting pushed up the middle to collapse the pocket, it may mean that you don't need to blitz as much. You don't need to send that nickel back. You don't need to send that inside linebacker on the blitz to try and manufacture pressure because you're now getting pressure, albeit from a different angle, coming from the inside and not the outside, but you should be able to start getting that with four guys now. And then plus what Jeffrey Simmons can do against the run, I think, you know, you're looking at a guy who can really make a big difference on this defensive line if he continues to develop.
Okay, what's going to give? The Bucs offense is the fourth best scoring offense in the league, basically putting up 29 points a game. The Titans are the fourth best defense in not giving up points, only averaging 16 points per game. We know they haven't given up more than 20 in a game. So what gives on Sunday?
Well, to me, it's going to come down to this, turnovers. If the Titans can have the Jameis Winston that was in London play and they're getting turnovers and takeaways and things like that, then I think they're going to win the game. If Jameis is sharp, if he's on his game, which we've seen him do before, then you know he can make the Titans pay. So it's going to be a lot of that. To me, is going to be riding on that.
Terry, how about these numbers here? Now you tell me if these names sound familiar: Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, Todd Gurley. That you might have had some fantasy drafts where those were the first four picks in some order in the draft. Maybe another guy thrown in there somewhere. Right? Fair to say?
Well, don't leave Breida off from San Francisco.
Now, Matt Breida is another guy that has had a really good year for a team that hadn't lost yet. Now, here are the rushing numbers for those guys against the Buccaneers. McCaffrey's played them twice. They've already played the Panthers twice, once in London. 16 carries, 37 yards. 22 carries, 31 yards. Saquon Barkley got hurt in the game, but before he got hurt, 8 carries for 10 yards. Alvin Kamara, 16 carries, 62 yards. Todd Gurley, 5 carries, 16 yards. Matt Breida, 15 carries, 37 yards. The Bucs have the number one rush defense in the league. So this looks like a game. Now, the other side of the coin is they've been giving up huge chunks of yards through the air. So it looks like it's pretty clear what the game plan is going to be.
Yeah, and you hope to, if you're the Titans, that Ryan Tannehill, what he did last week against the Chargers, proves to be for real. You know, getting guys like Corey Davis and A.J. Brown involved and letting them make chunk plays and that sort of thing, you know, certainly showed us an aspect of the offense we hadn't seen maybe over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, in terms of Titans could possibly do. Now, that said, you know, there was a reason that Miami gave up on Ryan Tannehill because he didn't do those types of things consistently enough when he was a Dolphin. So if you're the Titans, you have to hope that it carries over at least for a few games. And, you know, if you're the Bucs, you want to take advantage of the Titans' offensive line struggles, and you want to make him get a little bit of happy feet going and get him off the spot and making him throw those passes, you know, before he's comfortable doing it.
Terry McCormick is with us from TitanInsider.com. And, Terry, as you look at some of the injuries that the Titans are facing right now, I am a little concerned about some of those. We know Delanie Walker, the ankle, you know, what's going on there, but also cornerback Adoree Jackson did not practice on Thursday as he battles the foot injury.
Yeah, Adoree Jackson and Delanie Walker look like the big two that, you know, there might be some issues with. The good news is it looks like they may get Jayon Brown back this week after he missed last week with a groin injury. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a trade-off. You know, I think they can absorb the loss of Adoree Jackson better than they could absorb the loss of Jayon Brown, simply for the fact that Jayon Brown is the guy that covers the tight end out of the backfield. He's the guy that can cover running backs, you know, coming out of the backfield. With Adoree Jackson, yes, you know, he had been playing better over the last 2 or 3 games, but, you know, there's not a whole lot of drop-off if they have to go to a guy like LeSean Sims, who's a decent fill-in.
With Delanie Walker, and I know this is obviously a concern for the coaching staff. He, you know, really didn't play last week. He was on the sideline. Is this a situation where maybe they need to just shut him down for a few weeks just to make sure that ankle is fully healed?
Well, in the locker room Sunday after the Chargers game, he didn't sound too optimistic about being able to give it a go. It sounds like that ankle injury is, you know, something that's going to nag him for a little bit. I think they might be better off, you know, like you said, shutting him down, letting him have a couple of games to rest it, and then come back and bring him in, you know, back when he's healthy. You know, I think, you know, you feel a little bit better if you have to do something like that because of the emergence of the receivers and Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, and also the fact that Jonnu Smith has played pretty well and kind of come on as a pass receiver, at least on Sunday. And, you know, and a couple of times this year he's been able to do that. I don't think he's going to give you what Delanie Walker did in his prime, but I think he is a guy who is a reliable target and can get some yards after the catch.
The offensive line only gave up 2 sacks last week, a huge improvement for them after a tough start to the season. But Shaq Barrett comes in for the Tampa Bay Bucs, leading the team with 9 sacks. How do you see the offensive line being able to combat not only Shaq Barrett, but Ndamukong Suh and the others on that defensive line?
Yeah, that's a tough defensive line, and it's going to be a big test. You know, the big thing that scares me is Ndamukong Suh going against Nate Davis or Jameel Douglas, depending on who they want to put there. You know, to me, that's a scary match with a seasoned veteran who's been one of the best defensive linemen in the league over the last decade or so and going against a raw rookie who, you know, quite honestly, would probably be better served being a backup and learning this year rather than having to be thrown in and having to play every down. You know, the offensive line played better. I think maybe they game planned a little better last week to try and get the ball out a little quicker, something, you know, that Marcus Mariota had been guilty of holding the ball too long on occasion. But, you know, the Tampa defense is, you know, the defensive front is pretty darn good, and they're going to put some pressure on, and they're going to throw some looks at you that is going to put some pressure on that offensive line. It'll be interesting to see if they can hold up.
Indeed it will be, and I guess we'll find out at about 3 o'clock on Sunday how it all plays out. Terry, thanks for doing this, as always, and we'll all talk right to you soon.
All right, thanks.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, back to wrap up the second hour next. Talked about this last night. I know, Willie, you were working. You were doing your thing. Chase, you were doing your thing, unfortunately, because of what we put out there earlier, because there was a situation with Dave and our engineer, onsite engineer, and so there was a lot of stuff going on. But in pregame, I had on Becky Savage last night at Barrel House, who's with the 525 Foundation, and Saturday is National Take Back Day. And I want to put this back out there again because I do think it's important. I think we all fit into this category. And unfortunately, the Savage family lost two of their sons to this, prescription drugs and kids going to parties and, right, and overdosing. It's a scary thing. And what National Take Back Day is, we probably all have a medicine cabinet or cabinets that we keep prescription drugs, whether it's for ourselves, our family members, the pets, what, you know, you got all kinds of stuff out there. And a lot of times you just, when you're done, you don't finish and you just, it just sits there, right? And you forget all about it. And so the next thing you know, if you've ever cleaned out your medicine cabinets, which I'm guilty of, you go a long time and you don't even address it.
Right.
They're just sitting there. They're sitting there doing nothing. And this is kind of what they do. And the number she was throwing out that people returning, you know, pills, prescriptions that have expired, unused, unwanted, they get hundreds of pounds. Just think about how much a pill weighs.
Yeah.
How much your people were bringing to them to get that much, you know, expired prescription drugs. And so what the Predators have done is they've teamed up with them, and they're going to make both Fordyce centers available on Saturday. So the one in Antioch and the one in Bellevue, the new one. And they want you, and there's going to be two Walmarts. There's one on Nolensville Road, 5824 Nolensville Road, Nolensville Pike, excuse me. And there's one 4424 Lebanon Pike. That one is in Hermitage, okay? And those two Walmarts also will be available for you to bring expired, unused, and unwanted prescription drugs, okay? And take them to, and like I said, we all could probably do this at our house because it's just something you don't do. And then sometimes, I mean, for prime example, I just had stuff after a knee surgery, and I didn't take everything. I didn't finish everything. And so I've got stuff there that needs to go. There's no reason for it. And so they've been on this. She is one of the co-founders of the 525 Foundation, and she just travels around the country getting the word out about this. Like I said, it unfortunately affected their family, and it's a horrible thing. You hear opioids, and right, we know that word, but we don't maybe always know the stories, the backstories, and what really entails unless you have, Willie, you have teenagers, and it's a serious thing.
It's so unlike what we were taught growing up, right? We were all taught stay away from the guy on the street that's going to sell you this or that.
Right.
You know, it's such a different thing, but it is so serious of what happens. And like,
you can find it anywhere now.
No question.
Well, what did I just say? Their story is going to a high school party.
Yeah.
The kids just
grabbing something
out
of the medicine cabinet that, you know, that we didn't think about it, you know? And then it's an epidemic. It really is.
Well, like, you know, a prime example, you just had knee surgery, so they give you, you know, painkillers for that, and
you get addicted.
That stuff, you don't think about it. You put it up in your medicine cabinet, and maybe there's, you know, three or four pills left. You don't even think about it, and then that's what happens with, some of these situations. And so I respect and admire people that go through a horrible situation like that family did
and want to do something about
and
it.
And then it's like, how can we prevent this from happening to somebody else?
Rather than just shutting down,
Which
would be natural. I mean, that they go through a horrific, I mean, think about it. They lost two sons to this. I mean, just think about how their life 3 years ago was turned upside down. But you're right. That's a good point, Chase, that now they're doing great work in communities all around the country getting the word out. So it's from 10 until 2 o'clock tomorrow. Just remember our show hours. On Saturday, it's National Take Back Day. Two Ford Ice Centers, one in Antioch, one in Bellevue, and those two Walmart locations, one on Nolensville Pike and the one on Lebanon Pike, which is in Hermitage. Go do that today. If you're hearing this,
sure.
I guarantee you, most of you are guilty like I am of that stuff just sets there.
Yeah, you don't think about it.
And you don't think about it. And you know what? You're not only doing a great thing, you'll also be happy that you got that stuff out of your cabinets.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to pass that along for people who didn't hear it last night in pregame, because I thought it was a pretty worthy cause, and tomorrow you've got an opportunity to be a part of it. Speaking of that, a little back and forth in Tampa. So just a one-game road trip, which is rare. You're going to take on the Lightning, Predators take on the Lightning on Saturday, and back at home. I mean, don't you normally go to Sunrise? I mean,
normally.
Usually the scheduling would have you playing Tampa and Florida on the same road trip?
I think the real upset is you've gone to Southern California and played the Kings but not the Ducks, and now you go to Florida and play the Lightning but not the Panthers. That's
strange.
Very unusual.
Yeah. But still, Tampa, spend the night there in Tampa tonight, a fun city, as I just got back from not too long ago. So that'll be a good
Rocking down there. They have great crowds, and why wouldn't you want to go watch that team? That's a fun team.
I told you guys that, you know, when I got into Tampa and we're in the Uber just talking to the guys, he takes us to our hotel or the casino, and we're like, hey, so what's, you know, are people excited about the Bucks, you know, the Rays? They're probably going to make the playoffs. And it's like, dude, they're all in on the Bolts. It's all about the Lightning in this town. And you could see it everywhere. There's billboards and, like, buildings had a giant, you know, Lightning Bolt hanging on it. And so, I mean, when you have such a special year, as we know from a few years ago here in Nashville, I mean, that's what the city gravitates towards. But it was they're a Lightning town.
Well,
right,
Adam
now.
Vingan was on pregame, speaking of that, with me last night in the first segment. And he said the same thing. He's going down there to cover it. And he said, look, you're a Predators fan, you should go down there. It's a really cool environment. Like, they're all in. It's just kind of like the same atmosphere here. I don't know. You take it in. I haven't.
Sure.
So it's a really cool place to go watch a hockey game.
There's some parallels, too, of the last 5-6 years. Consistent winning. Disappointment after, you know, they were in the Stanley Cup Finals in 2015, I think. Of course, they had the year, the President's Trophy, the lights-out regular season like the Predators had the year before. They exited in the first round, didn't win a game.
Historic regular season.
Historic regular season, and then got swept.
Swept.
So, put it in perspective. You feel bad because the Predators lost
history,
in the second round
in
the seventh game after being the President's Trophy, and how painful that was. These guys didn't win a playoff game last year, as good as they were.
Mind-blowing.
And they're loaded again. So, it's just they're going back to the well. A lot of those same guys. It's a dominating team. It's a great test for the Predators, and we'll find out. We don't know the status of Philip Forsberg. In fact, we need to start checking because I think here they may be about to hit the ice for a brief period, or maybe they already are on the ice, or they take the day off? I don't even know.
The Preds?
Yeah.
Yeah, they took the day off.
I don't think they're on
the
ice.
So I guess we won't know about Duchesne and Forsberg, but you may be going in there without a couple of key weapons.
Yeah, no practice.
Yeah.
Today they're just.
I guess that's why they moved the flight up.
Yeah.
A few minutes
here. Yeah, I think they had meetings and then that was it.
Trying to heal up.
All right.
Rest up.
It's time for you to release. Come back, feel a little bit better. Someone or something has made you mad. Got a prize attached to it, too. We'll come back, kick off the third hour with You Just Made the List. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.